Parents, KiwiCo projects are designed to spark creativity, tinkering, and learning in kids of all ages. They make learning about STEAM fun. They're on a mission to empower kids, not just to make a project, but to make a difference. KiwiCo is offering Parenting Great Kids podcast listeners the chance to try them for free. To redeem this offer and learn more about their products for kids of all ages, visit kiwico.com/Meg. TeenCounseling.com connects your 13 to 19-year-old with a licensed professional counselor right where they spend most of their time, on their smartphone. Simply complete a short questionnaire and you'll be matched with a skilled therapist in TeenCounseling.com's network of specialists. Then, once you review their credentials and approve, the counselor and your teen will begin communicating directly. Visit teencounseling.com/Meg and help your teen take charge of their mental health. Parenting Great Kids listeners can get 10% off your first month at teencounseling.com/Meg.
For 30 plus years, I've seen every type of child grow up.
Instead of giving me what I wanted, she gave me what I needed, which was truth.
Don't let emotions win. Let truth win.
Do your very best, and you should have a lot of fun while you do it. And the better you get at something, the more fun you're going to have at something.
You moms and dads are wired with everything you need to be a parent to a great kid.
Welcome to Parenting Great Kids. This is episode number 85, and I'm your host, Dr. Meg Meeker. On today's episode, my guest is Dennis Prager. Many of you know Dennis. He's a best-selling author, columnist, and nationally syndicated radio talk show host based in Los Angeles. His radio show is heard by over 2 million listeners on 150 stations across the country. He is a highly sought-after speaker and frequent cable news show guest. Dennis has lectured all over the world, including Europe, Asia, Israel, and Australia. His New York Times best-selling books include Think a Second Time, Happiness is a Serious Problem, and Still the Best Hope, Why American Values Must Triumph. His new book, released in April of 2018, will be the first of 5 volumes in the Torah commentaries entitled The Rational Bible. I've read it. It's fantastic. His nonprofit venture, Prager University, co-founded with Alan Estrin, is a virtual university on the internet with a powerful twist. All the courses are 5 minutes long. In 2017 alone, PragerU had over 500 million views on YouTube and Facebook, making it by far the largest producer and distributor of non-liberal video content in the world. As always, I will share my points to ponder so you can start using them right away. And remember, don't just download episodes, click subscribe, because when you do that, you are joining my parenting revolution, and every new episode will automatically show up in your subscribed list. We'd love for you to write us a review on iTunes and let us know what you think of the podcast. Also, not only are we on iTunes, but the PGK podcast is also available in the Google Play Store and on Stitcher. So parents, thanks for listening. This is episode number 85. Stay with us. Now, I want you to listen in on a conversation I had with Dennis Prager. I know you're going to enjoy it. Well, Dennis Prager, thank you so much for coming on my podcast today.
Well, I want you to know it's an honor and a delight, and I can only tell you that you are talking to me about the great passion of my life, because I have wanted to bring the Bible to the world in a contemporary, utterly rational understanding since I was in high school, and I'm living a dream.
The book we're talking about is Genesis, God, Creation, and Destruction. And it's really more than a commentary, Dennis. It's exegetical. It really pulls out line by line in Genesis. And you write, what that line is really telling us and what it has to do with us today. So I really believe that this is going to be a book, one of the most significant books written. And I think that people, you know, 50, 100 years from now are going to be reading this book because it's not only so rich with exegesis, it's rich with life lessons that you wouldn't think somebody would be found in Genesis. So let's just dive in. You talk at the beginning of the book about God's existence, that Genesis is really about saying God exists. This is his character. And we're living in a time where science explains what is, but God, the creator, explains why something is. What's the difference?
Yes, that's right. Look, I am alive thanks to science. All right, let me make it clear that I have great gratitude to science and to scientists. However, science tells me nothing about the meaning of life, about good and evil, about how to live my life. It gives me, there is no wisdom in science. None. There is knowledge, and it is unbelievably important knowledge. But, and likewise, I'm not going to develop a cure for cancer from reading Genesis. Right. Although I will tell you that the case can be made, after one asks a pretty rational question, why did virtually all modern science and medicine develop in the Western world, which was made by the Bible? The Western world was created by the Bible. All right, let's be honest. Whether people are atheist or agnostic or believer, that's either true or untrue, and it's true. That's what the defining text of the Western world. Obviously, the Magna Carta is important. The American Bill of Rights is important. But the people who wrote the Bill of Rights said, we get this from this book and from the God of this book, and this God gives us inalienable rights. So, in a sense, science exists as we know it, thanks to this book. But that's what I mean when I make the distinction of what is and what ought to be.
You know, we're living in a culture that is largely secular now, and there's a movement towards, you know, a secular culture and sort of pushing God aside. And yet Genesis shows us and you teach us that there, without God and without honoring God as creator, a human being cannot have a purpose or meaning in their life. And I think that's one of the big problems with kids today. Oh,
forgive me. Let me just explain. I'm very precise on this. People can make up a purpose. People do all the time. But there isn't any actual meaning. It's made up. It for there to objectively exist meaning in the universe, there must be a creator. Otherwise, everything is coincidence and all is matter, and you die, and that is the end. You are no different from a rock on Jupiter. Mm-hmm. But I won't deny, and I'm happy that people can. People make up meanings who are secular all the time. I find it meaningful to be a parent. I find it meaningful to be a spouse, a friend, a worker. I get it. But they have to be honest that they have made up a meaning so it was not to go crazy. As to your point, you are entirely right. The lack of meaning is the crisis in the Western world today, and certainly in the United States. That is why people make up and gravitate towards secular meanings like environmentalism and socialism and feminism, all the isms that have replaced the Judeo-Christian world. That they may have all sorts of fine ideas. I don't think many of them do, but it doesn't matter. But they're all substitute religions because people need meaning.
Yeah. I really believe that as parents have fallen away from understanding their meaning, and I'm sort of thinking as you're talking that if you have a made-up meaning, that's great. I'm a physician. I enjoy it. But the meaning that I have as a child of God is irreplaceable. And I wonder if parents, I see this, are not even teaching their kids why they're alive. And what difference does it make to a child if a parent doesn't teach them why they should get up in the morning?
Well, look, we know. I mean, I think that the drug issue is a symptom. I think that the alienation from America, from the West, that you see, that characterizes so many young people. You mentioned you're a physician. Mm-hmm. And I know, of course, it should give you a sense of fulfillment. Absolutely. But you're going to retire one day.
Yep.
And then what happens? Or if, God forbid, let's say you were in a disabling accident 20 years ago. So does that end your meaning in life because you're no longer a physician? That's, by the way, that's what's happened. Career has really become this fantasy meaning, as if, by the way, most careers are not exactly that fulfilling. I mean, let's be honest. People should try to make the best of it, and thank God most people do. But I don't know why being the CEO of a sports equipment sales company is meaning giving. It's purpose giving. It pays your bills, and all of that is wonderful. It fills the ego, but it's not exactly a meaning giver. So let's be honest. How many, you're in a rare profession. You do get meaning every day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But again, you're going to retire one day, and if you don't have religion, what's your meaning going to be? You're just going to wait to die?
Right. I see, obviously bringing this always back to parenting. One of the things that I see a huge mistake parents make is they raise kids to be successful, to be that CEO, to get into Yale, to do the sports well. And I think that if you raise kids to be quote unquote successful, you're doing exactly what you're talking about. Have a great job, make a lot of money so you can raise kids to do the same thing. But kids know better than that. They know that that's not why they're put on the earth. But parents don't teach them to be good. They teach them to be successful. And so a lot of what you're saying really translates beautifully into parenting. Let's talk about, in Genesis, you talk about just one, why it's important for God to have a masculine character. Now, we believers know that God has a predominantly masculine character. And you say that any discomfort one feels with masculine depiction of God is not comparable to pain one feels if boys are not civilized into good men. So that there's this real sense that the masculinity of God is necessary to bring order to our world. And I know that's going to bother a lot of feminists, but why is that so important, do you think, to write about in Genesis?
Ask any single mother if it wouldn't be easier to raise a boy, and for that matter, often a girl, if a good man were around. I mean, it's what we live in the age of the denial of the obvious. Boys need men.
We do.
Okay, boys need men. Period. End of issue. If it's not going to be your father, it's going to be your uncle. If it's not your uncle, it's going to be your pastor, your priest, your minister, your rabbi, or it's going to be some villain in a movie. But or it's going to be a gang leader, like in the inner city, where there are no fathers, practically. Mm-hmm. So the combination of no father on earth and no father in heaven is devastating to society.
Yes. And I think that's hard for single moms to hear because, as we know, a lot of the households are headed by single moms. And as much as we want to encourage and help them, the truth of the matter is they can't be dad. You say also, if we want good in the world, we have to understand that the primary perpetrators of evil are men. And that was a very bold statement, but you're absolutely right. And there is a difference between men and women. We'll get to that in a second. But, you're absolutely right that God the Father is an enormous principle or reality.
If a male figure tells me not to steal, it's much more effective than if a female figure tells me not to steal. Likewise, as I point out there, since God is also compassionate, compassion has been rendered a masculine trait. That's a big deal.
Yes. What about empathy?
Yes, exactly. All of that. I mean, God is all of that.
He is. And yet you talk about, I was intrigued by this, his name El Shaddai, and that Shad is synonymous with the word breast or is it not?
Yes, it is. Yes. Okay. Well, it is confusing because the word for breast is Shaddaim, and the word one of the terms for God is Shaddai. So a lot of people have thought that it is, and I did too, by the way, until I did the research for the book. They thought that this was a way of giving God a feminine, which is fine with me. I have no problem, a feminine side, as it were. But it turns out the scholars all deny that it has to do with the word breasts, even as much as they sound similar.
So is it, what is the word then?
We don't know. Believe it or not, El Shaddai, El we know, of course, is God. Shaddai, the scholars are not sure. And I have no problem in writing that. It doesn't happen often, but I think your listeners should know that the name of it is The Rational Bible. Genesis is the subtitle because I'm doing all five books. So they could get the Exodus and Genesis. They're both out. But it's called The Rational Bible, and it's because I only use reason, and I want to appeal to the atheist as much as to the believer that this is the greatest book ever written. Mm-hmm. So, but I do on occasion acknowledge I don't have an answer to this riddle. I don't have an issue with that. And Shaddai is one of them. I mean, it's not exactly critical, but with all the research I did, I gave in the footnote all sorts of possible explanations, but none of them add up.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of mysteries and unanswered questions that even scholars like you, and I was trying to find questions I could ask, are so hard that maybe you wouldn't have an answer because it's hard for us. Parents, I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Dennis Prager. We need to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more of my conversation with Dennis Prager. Friends, did you know that 1 in 6 kids in the United States faces hunger? And that number goes up during the summer months when kids don't have access to school meal programs. Well, Undeniably Dairy and America's dairy farmers have been passionate about providing food to families for a long time. And this summer, they're building on dairy's commitment to nourishing communities by partnering with Feeding America to fight child hunger. Dairy remains a simple, affordable source of many essential nutrients in a time when eating healthy only seems to get more complicated. It's beneficial for all ages because it provides essential nutrients your body needs, like protein and calcium. And since 95% of dairy farms are family-owned, when you buy cheese, yogurt, or milk, you're supporting hard-working dairy farm families near you. In fact, most milk is made less than a 2-hour drive from where it's sold. So won't you please help get food to families who need it? Go to giveagallon.com to donate to a food bank in your community. Then stay tuned at the end of this episode to hear about Carrie, who knows that raising her family on a dairy farm is a unique blessing. And this is something that she's passionate about because she grew up with food insecurity and knows what it feels like to not have enough nutritional food. Well, it's no surprise Rothy's has over 1,000 nearly perfect reviews. They're stylish, sustainable, comfortable, washable, really the perfect flats for life on the go. And friends, I am on the go and I wear Rothy's almost every day. As a matter of fact, I went to the beach a couple days ago with my daughter and grandkids and I had my Rothy's on and I was in the sand and started to walk in the water and my daughter said, "Mom, take your shoes off." And I said, "Don't worry, they're Rothy's. Nothing's going to hurt them." And it was true. Since Rothy's are seamlessly crafted from recycled water bottles, they're ultra comfortable as soon as you slip them on. That's right, there's zero break-in period in these shoes. Plus, they're constantly launching new styles, so you're guaranteed to find a pair or three that you love. Better yet, Rothy's are manufactured in a zero-waste factory, and they ship directly in the shoebox. No unnecessary packaging. Rothy's always comes with free shipping and free returns or exchanges. No risk, no worries, no reason not to try. You'll quickly discover why BuzzFeed called them their forever shoes. Check out all the amazing styles available right now at rothys.com/Meg. Go to rothys.com/Meg to get your new favorite flats. Comfortable, style, and sustainability. These are the shoes you've been waiting for. Head to rothys.com/Meg today. You also write, and I just love this point, you know, in the contemporary age where we reject the Bible, and I think that's, I feel that, I think that's happening with the rise of secularism in our culture. We're destroying distinctions between, obviously, what we see now is between man and woman. We've destroyed the distinction between right and wrong, God and man, good and evil, and,
Man and animal. That's on the list.
Man and animal. So, you know, we've done this, I think, under the guise of it's more intellectual to sort of blur them all together. Why is it so important? Because God wrote about that. God made these very clear distinctions, and I wholly agree with you. Why are those distinctions so important to a civilized society?
Well, that's one of the reasons that the Bible is so important, because we would never have come up with this on our own. Genesis describes not just creation, but even more so, God making order out of chaos.
Yeah.
That's really what happens. In fact, the word holy in Hebrew means separate, distinct. The concept of distinction is the central idea between, as I write, as you properly, and I am grateful for you citing, good and evil, man and God, man and woman, man and animal. I don't know if I just said that to you. Holy, yeah, and profane. We don't have that anymore. Why did people not curse publicly? Because it was called profane. It was a profanity. In the post-biblical age, there's no such thing as a profanity.
Right.
You have actors getting up and say F Trump. Robert De Niro has no problem at the Academy Awards saying F Trump. Robert De Niro is a quintessential secular man. He has no concept of the distinction. To him, the F word is like apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered the non-distinction between human and animal when I asked kids all over the country, not little kids, high school kids, 40 years ago, when I started speaking in my 20s, I would ask, would you save your dog or a stranger first if both were drowning? 2/3 wouldn't save the stranger,
right,
because they don't see the difference. They love their dog, and that's all that matters, love. So all of this is in there because this is lessons for life. If you don't have wisdom, you can't lead a good life. You can have good intentions. It means nothing. Good intentions, right, mean nothing. Wisdom is everything. So this is the wisest book ever written. My task is to explain why it is.
Well, you do a beautiful job of it. And I will tell you that this is one of the most significant books. And you're talking about writing the five books of...
That's right.
Which is the Torah.
That's the Torah, yes, the first five, five books of Moses. Yep.
Yes. I just have to ask you a side question. I read or heard that in Hebrew schools, when kids are very young, maybe kindergarten, that a rabbi would set the scripture down and next to it, he'd pour a little bit of honey and he'd say, taste it, how sweet this is. That is the sweetness of the scriptures. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's real, but
yeah,
I thought,
it is true. That's correct.
But what a beautiful way to introduce kids to scriptures.
I fell in love with it as a child, and it's never stopped. And my task, I believe, in life is to bring it to the world. Mm-hmm. That's why I call it the rational Bible, because I only use reason, not faith.
Right. You also write that we know no pre-modern society was ever atheistic. So let me turn it around. Can a society survive without religion or faith in God? Can we survive in the direction that we're going by pushing God out?
There's no doubt in my mind that the answer is no, and people will find secular meanings that will be morally and intellectually inferior to the Judeo-Christian world we've made. That you already see it.
We do see it. We're on a path to destruction, but it feels like we're on a path of enlightenment, but it really is a path of destruction. Genesis has a lot to say about parents, and by talking about Noah's son, Ham, maybe a lot of people don't know the story, but you're right, the good parents can have really crummy kids and vice versa. Crummy parents can have really good kids. Ham was Noah's son. Noah, of course, was this, you know, incredibly righteous man. Tell us about Ham, what he did, and how he turned out from such a great father.
Right. Well, that's the lesson I want to draw from the story, because it will help people to understand, look, the most righteous man on earth, worthy of being the only person along with his family to be saved by God in the flood. And look at how his son turns out, the son who, you know, who saw his father's nakedness. It's somewhat cryptic. Yeah. And it either means that he humiliated the father or that he actually did something sexual, because to expose nakedness is a euphemism in Hebrew in the Old Testament for some sexual contact. But either way, it was evil. And the point, again, being, look at this, the most righteous man in the world has a bad son. There's a lot of luck in how our kids turn out. Sometimes they turn out really good and we're lucky, and sometimes bad and it's bad luck. We didn't deserve it. And vice versa, as you point out that I said, you obviously read it carefully. I'm very flattered. Mm-hmm. But there are some really awful people with great kids.
There are. I've seen them.
It's sort of not fair.
Right. Well, you know, and as I read through, I always ask my question, why would God write that? And my sense as a parent with grown kids and five grandkids now is you realize as you get older that we had less and less to do with it than we thought we did. And to me, that it's God's mercy and God's grace that our kids turn out well. And yet that is contradictory to what I've spent my life trying to tell parents, is that it's really important to be a good parent. So is this passage saying it doesn't matter if you're a good parent or not, because your kids are just going to turn out the way they are?
Well, first of all, we don't know if Noah was a good parent. We know he was a good person. A good person and a good parent are no more related than a good person and a good shortstop. You could be a lousy shortstop and a great person. You could be a lousy parent. I know a lot of wonderful people who are lousy parents because they're so permissive.
Right.
So we don't know that Noah was a good parent. We only know that he was a good person.
He was a good man.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
and he trusted God.
I know. The truth is, of course, look. You could be a great driver and still get into a crash. But it's still better to be a great driver than a lousy driver. It's much better to be a good parent than a lousy parent. There are no guarantees in life. As I always say, being a parent is humbling.
Yeah.
And we could all use a dose of humility.
I think absolutely. And I think that sometimes the hardest people that I have getting through to are the very intelligent parents who believe that what is the best for their kids is just to let their kids sort of pick their way through life and be very permissive. And that's exactly the opposite of what kids need. This is a big issue that I see. Family reconciliation. You write about Joseph, and we all know that Joseph's brother sold him into slavery. And then you talk about his brothers, Benjamin and Judah, that Joseph actually set up Benjamin to be looked at as a thief, and he was caught. And Joseph said, well, I'll take him as my slave. But Judah stepped forward and said, no, I will take Benjamin's place. I don't know of anybody that I've ever known who would do such a thing. And this was after he had betrayed Joseph. So what is the message in there for us who may be estranged from our families because we had a fallout over money or something like that. What's the message God's trying to tell us about handling family and people in our family we don't like or get along with?
Well, you hope ultimately that there's repentance, because that the brothers did repent, as it happens. That's why Joseph put them through tests. He knew who they were when they met in Egypt, but they did not know who he was. They just thought he was the Egyptian prime minister, as it were, the first person under the Pharaoh. So that helps. If you have a sibling who is rotten and never repents, it's a tough slog. I mean, we have to be realistic, but certainly the Joseph story holds out the concept of hope, that it may never be too late for you to have this reconciliation and to hopefully be open to it. You know, Joseph could have rejected them. Oh, my God, you guys who sold me into slavery, you're showing up here for food? Go to hell.
Well, that would have been, that's the normal human response.
That's right, exactly. So that's why he's a great man, Joseph. He is a great man.
So to always think about that, if you've got a falling out with your family, because families are really hard to deal with, and the reconciliation. So to, if you're a parent out there and you're having a hard time with your family, read the story of Joseph, and it'll really humble you. You also say that the most frequent statement in scripture, this is fabulous, is do not fear.
Yeah, and that's something.
It's great? Amazing. And I talk to parents a lot about fear, and I think they're afraid of their kids. They're afraid of upsetting their kids. And God has dealt with this fear issue, because we see it all through the Old Testament and the New Testament. Why is acting through our fear or in the midst of our fear important? And what do you think people are most afraid of today?
Well, people have an immense number of fears. People fear in certain neighborhoods. They fear being killed, and the most primal fear. But for people middle class and higher, people fear being fired from work. People fear being alienated from a child. People fear a whole host of things. People in public life fear the New York Times.
Rightly so.
So it's right. Well, I don't. I'm in pub, and I knew that if the Times ever writes about me, it's going to be bad, and I was right.
Right, so, you're right.
Yeah. So
you know,
but I don't care what they say, and I really do fear God, and it's given me a lot of courage.
Yeah, and that's far more important than fearing anybody else, because fear does have a huge influence on how we act and treat other people and how we conduct our lives and our jobs. We only have a minute left, and I have to ask you this question, because I get a lot. Many people who don't want to believe in God or can't reconcile the character of God say, how can I believe in a God who allows or advocates the killing of so many people in the Old Testament? Because they look at the Old Testament as being so violent that they say, I just can't deal with that. And you talk about this.
Well, in a nutshell, I'll tell you an answer in a nutshell. The only reason they're asking the question is because of this Bible. This Bible taught them to think morally. Where before the Bible was there love your neighbor as yourself, love the stranger? Where that didn't love God, it didn't exist. This introduced every noble idea into civilization that these people take for granted. So they take for granted all the great things it brought in, and then they pick out stories which have no relevance for today. They are simple. Yes, the Israelites conquered Canaan. Whoopee-doo. So you are going to tell me, oh, therefore, I don't need a Ten Commandments. I don't need a good God. I don't need a just God. I don't need an afterlife. I don't need any of the teachings of the Bible, because God instructed the Israelites to conquer Canaan. I mean, it's so immature, that argument, that I guess you can hear the passion in my voice.
I think, too, that people wonder, is God, does God contradict himself?
No, I mean, they would have to give me an example of where God contradicted himself. By the way, the beauty, again, this is unique to the Bible, and it's unique to the Torah, is you're not only allowed to argue with God. This is the first time in human history people argued with a God. Never happened in Greece, never happened in Rome, never happened in China, never happened in South America, Latin America, American Indians. People don't argue with God. The name of the Israelite, Israel, means fight with God. That's what it means. It's not my definition. It says it in the Bible. It's in Genesis.
My guest is Dennis Prager, author of Genesis, God, Creation, and Destruction. It's the second book that he's writing in a 5-book series on the Torah, covering each of the Old Testament books. Dennis, this is a fabulous book. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. I'm very flattered by your attention. Thank you.
And now on to my points to ponder. First, Genesis shows us that God instructs parents. You know, many people look at the Old Testament and think, oh, that's outdated, and people take it too literally, and it has nothing to say about me. But if you look at Genesis, it has an extraordinary amount of parental advice. And you won't know that unless you read through it and look for it. And when you find it, absorb it, try it, utilize it. It works. It says that goodness must be, it says that goodness must be taught. No, let me say that again. What we fail to remember is that goodness must be taught to kids. Raising good kids is more important than raising successful ones. And successful ones know how to reconcile with family members, particularly estranged ones. And we saw that in the story of Joseph and his brothers. It teaches us why God is masculine and the importance of having God as father. Second, God is the creator of humans and your child. Your child is not in your life by accident. Children need to know that they aren't here by accident, and they aren't a result of molecules coming together and just happen. No, let me start that again. Sorry, Bobby. Two, God is the creator of humans. And that includes your child. You know, children need to know that they aren't here by accident, that they weren't given to you as their child by accident. They were put in your life and put on earth for a specific purpose that came from a designer that was a good designer, and that designer is God. Believing that they're here because of an accident, a random scientific act of the Big Bang, doesn't give kids a reason to be alive. And if there's anything that's important for kids today, friends, is this. Kids need to know that there's a reason for them to be alive, and they are not here by accident, but by design. Third, God created parents who can be great parents and have kids who go way off track. And the opposite is also true. Bad parents can raise great kids. The point is, luck, or providence, as the Bible would call it, is involved in how every child turns out. You know, we parents are called to do the very best we can, to work hard at being a good parent. And we can be, but much of what our kids experience and how they turn out is out of our hands. Okay, friends, let's get social. You know I love hearing from you. I want to interact with you. You can always connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD. Or if you have a question, send it to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. I will tell you, friends, I'm getting some incredibly deep and wonderful questions. And I'm so grateful when I get them because it really shows me how on the ball you all are as parents. My first question is from Lisa, and she writes, I just read your article about social media linked to anxiety and depression. I'm at the point where I know something needs to be done. My oldest daughter will be 16 soon and has suffered from anxiety and depression. I will say she took herself off social media for a very long time and still suffered. Through counseling and time, she's progressed positively. However, I still feel she's on her phone way too much. How can I take her phone away for longer periods of time without it making her more depressed? I feel it may strongly limit her time with friends and throw her into a bigger depression. It truly is her lifeline. It's how she communicates with all of her friends. But I know it can't be good. Please help me do this. What a great question, Lisa. And first of all, kudos to you for seeing that your daughter was struggling with anxiety and depression and getting her help. Many parents see it, but they just don't want to do anything about it, so they kind of ignore it. Here's what you need to do. Remember, when you have a 16-year-old girl or boy, they can't accurately assess what is good for them now or even in the future because they're dealing with a 16-year-old mind. Your daughter, in addition to her mind being very young and limited cognitive ability, is dealing with depression. So she has this sort of dark cloud over her that is lifting, which is awesome, but she's not able to say, this is good for me, this is bad for me, because of her age and her depression. So here's what I would encourage you to do. I would sit down with your daughter and I'd say, honey, you have been through so much. And I am so proud of you that you are open to treating and getting over your depression. And you and I both know you've made some great strides in getting healthy. My job as your mom is to keep that process moving forward. And what I want to do is I need to link arms with you and we need to do this together and I'm going to help you. One of the things that we know, and don't say one of the things I know or she knows, one of the things that we know that doctors say is very true is that social media can make you more depressed. And depression is a really serious issue. So what you and I are going to do over the next 2 months is find ways to wean you off of some social media. I'm not telling you you need to be off of it entirely, and she doesn't. But what I'd like you to do is see if you can start cutting back 15 minutes a day. Just 15 minutes a day. And I want you to start seeing over time how that makes you feel. You know you can stay off of social media. You did it before. And I know you felt it didn't help you that much, but we need to give it more time. So I would work with her, find a very simple way to start weaning her down from social media without making her feel, oh my gosh, my mom's going to take my phone and throw it away. You don't want to communicate that because you're not going to do that. You're going to gradually start weaning her down 15 minutes a day, 15 minutes every other day, and you're going to give it some time. But don't expect her to want it. Don't expect her to understand it. And don't expect her to know why and how she should do it. This is just something that you need to gently and gingerly take hold of and help her navigate. And I know that you can do it. If your daughter knows that you're doing it out of love, not because you're trying to come down hard and heavy on her, she will be much more cooperative. And I know you can do it. Parents, I love answering your questions. So please keep sending them in to me. You can email me your parenting questions to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. Again, that's askmeg@megmeekermd.com. I want to thank my guest, Dennis Prager. You can find out more about Dennis when you go to DennisPrager.com. That's DennisPrager.com. You can also find Dennis on Facebook and Twitter as well. Just search for Dennis Prager on your internet browser. So let's recap my points to ponder. One, Genesis shows us that God instructs parents. Two, God is the creator of humans, your child. Three, God created people, parents, who can be great parents and have kids who go way off track. So until next time, parents, always remember that great kids are raised, not born.
Hey, this is Bobby, producer of Meg Meeker's Parenting Great Kids podcast. Thanks for listening to episode 85, What the Old Testament Has to Teach Us. And because of your dedication to raising great kids, Dr. Meg's Parenting Revolution has grown to over 3 million downloads. Head on over to Facebook and Twitter and follow at Meg Meeker MD and check out what's new at MegMeeker.com. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter to stay updated and get information about giveaways. Don't forget to share the podcast with other parents, subscribe so you won't miss anything, and leave us a review so we know how we're doing.
For Carrie, raising her family on a dairy farm is a unique blessing.
So my older boy helps. Helps is in quotation marks. He's around. Like, he's really great. If you need a whole dog, he is on it. If you need calf grain scattered everywhere but in the pails for the calves, he is your man. I'm Carrie Mess, and it's mess like make a mess. Everyone calls me Dairy Carrie. I live in Wisconsin. I'm a dairy farmer.
Life on the farm is one many folks are born into, but Carrie had a less traditional route. She married into a dairy family, but even that wasn't enough to get her into farm life. She had to take matters into her own hands.
So my husband, he had a job in town. He wasn't the kid that always planned on coming back. After we got married, so I was like, maybe I should try dairy farming. And we went to his parents and we were like, okay, will you please hire me? And they're like, not really, no. And so I quit my job and forced the issue and just kind of started showing up and milking cows. And fortunately for everyone, mostly for the cows, I really found my passion. I love what I do. I love taking care of cows. I love taking care of the land. Like, this is what I was meant to do, 100%.
And as a farmer, she also gets to supply families quality, nutritious food through the dairy she produces. That's something Carrie is particularly passionate about because she knows what it's like to grow up with food insecurity.
I actually grew up in the city in Madison, and I grew up in a house with a single mom, and we didn't always have everything we would have liked to have. So as an adult, having a real interest in food insecurity has been driven by my own personal experience. Things were tight a lot as a kid, and having that perspective as somebody who wasn't always 100% food secure really sticks in my mind. So, you know, I talk about farmers being providers. For me personally, it is really important to continue to push in any way, shape, or form that I can to help others not be in that position. So, you know, 1 in 6 kids right now are food insecure. It's really important to me to try to get that number to 0.
Undeniably Dairy is teaming up with Feeding America this summer to help give food banks the dairy products they need to nourish the communities they serve. Just go to giveagallon.com and donate today. Giveagallon.com.
Anybody that's listening to this that really wants to get involved, hopefully you're moved by hearing the story of a dairy farmer who didn't always grow up food secure. You're moved to do something because we really do need more people involved. You can go check out giveagallon.com and be part of this movement.